Good morning. Welcome to the Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast by the fans for the fans. I'm Kevin. That's Christian. That's Mitch. Thanks again for tuning in. We're very excited to have you here with lots to talk about. By the way, for those just tuning in, live update, Santa Clara up 2-0 over Tondela. That is in the 76th minute of that game. So we'll provide updates as this podcast goes on. Lots to get to, and we're going to start actually across the pond in England. Cristiano Ronaldo making his voice heard and causing a bit of a stir up at Manchester United. So let's talk about that first. Cristiano Ronaldo essentially calling out some of the guys on the team, basically saying they're not where they need to be. He doesn't want to be playing on a Manchester United team that's battling for 5th, 6th, 7th place. What do you guys make of that?
Honestly, this is we all know about the Messi and Ronaldo fanboy section now, you know, divided there. But this is the one time I found that everybody was on the same page in terms of, you know, backing Ronaldo on this one.
Yeah.
He pretty much, in his own words, he obviously on an interview, you can't go out and say it. Like, you can't just say things that are super bold, because especially being a guy like Ronaldo, you know, it could be taken out of context. But what I pretty much got out of it, and I watched a lot of pundits talk about it, and I got a lot of people's opinions on it. He's pretty much trying to say that the mentality on that team is weak. There's a lot of egos. And the main thing that some of these young players, they cannot take criticism. So one of the main reasons why Ronaldo is there, obviously being who he is, he's a superstar, he's a club legend. But one of the main things that they talked about is that he can help the next group of young players out with being a more of a professional, guide them, show them what it takes to win. So what I'm pretty much getting out of this is that he's criticizing certain players, trying to make them better or more of a professional, and they're not having it. Some of these young players that they don't want to listen to him, essentially. They pretty much are saying that, you know, we don't need your help, we got this. And a lot of people are talking about that dressing room is not the best. It's not the best. There's a lot of toxicity there. There's a lot of egos. And their standard is very, very low. And he keeps talking about that he does not want to be on a team that's battling or playing for sixth or seventh place. He wants to be up there winning. He says he doesn't want to be in a position where they're not battling for the top three positions. And honestly, I'm with him. And if you read the comment sections, they're all saying, it's like, man, imagine what kind of world is it where you have a guy like Cristiano Ronaldo and you do not want to listen to him. You don't want to pick his brain. You're like, man, like, I don't think he's the best, given the Messi fans. But if he was on my team, you'd want to learn from him.
Who do you think he's talking about specifically? Marcus Rashford and Mason Greenwood?
I'm seeing Greenwood as number one that they're talking about the most. But in my opinion, it'd be Rashford and Greenwood. And there's a lot of rumors coming out. I was watching Sky Sports actually yesterday about it, that they're thinking that Maguire and him are not seeing eye to eye. But honestly, like, Maguire, he has been like their most expensive signing ever, I believe, or one of them. At least for defensemen, it's the most expensive signing ever. He's the captain, and he's been massively, massively underperforming. So I now know Bruno's got into it with him too. So there's a lot of things going on in the dressing room. We can see it on the field. The results are just they're not to their standard.
This begs the question, was Ole really the problem there?
Well, it even goes before Ole, Mitch. There was a problem with Mourinho, remember, with Mourinho and Pogba, Mourinho and this. And it's the same thing. Like, ever since Sir Alex left, no manager can pick this team up and get a hold of this dressing room. So I know the easy out is to blame the coach, and that's for everywhere, sure. And every team. Chibifika's going through it. But sometimes you got to look at the player selection there, and it starts from the top down. Like, right from the top down, it's been shambolic there. It's been horrible for Man United. They need a whole cleanup, and now they got that Rangnick guy there, and from what I'm hearing is he's starting as a coaching role just to see what the problems are and the players are. And I think it's actually a really good idea because he'll have a really, really good understanding of the dressing room. And then he's going to work his way up to a bigger position. And I agree with it that because Man United, they need a cleanup, man. And it sucks because one of their players, I believe, this is my personal opinion, that needs to go. It's Maguire. Starts from there. I don't think he's a great captain. He's been in the media. He has been underperforming. He hasn't been a great leader. I think it starts there, and it's hard because of how much money Manchester United invested into this group. But if it's not working, it's not working.
Yeah. Okay. So then the we've talked about this before in the past, and I'm not necessarily saying this is the issue here or not, but let's have this discussion again. You look at Bruno Fernandes yesterday, scores two goals, plays a really good game. But man, it's like Ronaldo's not in the lineup. These guys step up and they start playing really well and they start believing in themselves and they're not just trying to feed the ball to Cristiano Ronaldo. We've talked about this with the Portuguese national team. Is there a point now where, like, what does Cristiano I don't want to say what does Cristiano Ronaldo bring, because we all know what he brings. And I mean, he's a game changer. He can make so many, you know, I mean, he dominates games. But at what point does there need to be a shift both on Ronaldo's perspective and from the team's perspective? Because like I said, they seem to play better when he's not on that lineup.
I don't know. They necessarily played better yesterday.
No, they
blew a 2-0 lead.
They blew a 2-0 lead and tied.
Well, okay. Yeah. I mean, yes, they blew a 2-0 lead. That the second half, Aston Villa like dominated for that sure. entire second half. But nonetheless, I mean, again, specifically, you're getting guys like Bruno Fernandes finding the back of the net when Ronaldo's not playing. Portuguese national team, we've seen it before.
Yeah.
The guys play a lot better when Ronaldo's not in that lineup. Yeah, and Christian, I know what your opinion is, but.
No, we've talked about this before, and I've often said that I think Ronaldo brings a lot of pressure to the field. but at the same time, in this particular instance, these guys got to step up. I mean, I think Man United as a whole, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I think these problems go way, way, you know, before Ronaldo coming in here. I think they had lots of problems in that dressing room. I think a guy like Ronaldo can either help it and fix it or make it 10 times worse, because he's coming into a situation where he is a club legend. He is idolized. He is this godlike figure in the dressing room. And that's either going to unite a dressing room or polarize it even more. So in this particular instance, It especially when the results aren't happening, it may be doing the exact opposite. And there's been rumors that there's kind of two sides of the dressing room. There's the Portuguese speaking side of the dressing room, and then everybody else. So you've got Alex Telles, Fred, Ronaldo, Dalot, and Bruno Fernandes kind of against everybody else. That's one of the articles I was reading the other day. Whether that's the case or not, I don't know. I can't see guys like Bruno Fernandes and Diogo Dalot, you know, not siding with Ronaldo on certain things. So I definitely think there may be a kind of an English faction and maybe a Portuguese faction in the team right now, and that might be dividing the dressing room a little bit, because I don't think anybody wants to take responsibility, because you've got, like you said, you've got a lot of big egos in that room. A guy like Harry Maguire, who's the team captain, with the performances that he's been putting in, which have been brutal to say the least. Is he taking responsibility as the team captain? Is he the one coming up and saying, you know, this is on me. Some of this is on me. Like, we don't know what, and this is the tough thing. You've got Harry Maguire, who's the team captain, yet Cristiano Ronaldo is this idolized godlike figure. So it's like he's the team captain, but really, who is the team captain?
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That dressing room just has so many different dynamics right now with egos, with player roles. And I kind of feel bad for the new coach because he's stepping into what seems like a bit of a shit show. And man, I don't know that Ronaldo's going to stick around for this. Okay, he's not getting any younger. He's only got probably maybe another 2-3 seasons at top flight that he's going to be putting in here. I don't know that he's going to stick around for this. I think from what I heard, the rumors were Georges Mendes already flew into England and he's trying to help, smoothen things out, because if not, I could see him leaving in the summer.
For sure. But you know what? You're 100% right. Everything you said is 100% right. And I can honestly see that happening. But this wouldn't be the only sports team that ever have problems in the locker room. For sure. I don't want to switch sports here. I know this is a soccer podcast, but one of the most iconic rivalries was Shaq and Kobe. They hated each other. Absolutely hated each other. They wouldn't even talk after the games. But on the court, they lit it up. They won championships. So you don't have to like each other. So my point is, yeah, Ronaldo's clashing heads. Maybe there's cliques. But on the field is where you show. If you want to be the captain, if you want to be the leader, if you want whatever, you show it on the field. If your field performance is shit, what leg do you have to stand on? Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody has issues in the locker room, especially when like you said, you put all these egos aside, but you still have a job, man.
Yeah.
Like a guy like Maguire, how much is he getting paid a week, man? He still's got to be a professional. He's still got to go there. Or if he can't get a hold of the locker room, if there is cliques, he's the captain, man. He's got to bring those cliques together. That's his job.
I don't think he has the personality.
He doesn't. From what I've seen. Exactly. You just hit the nail on the head. If that locker room's that divided and there's cliques there, that just tells me Maguire is not a good captain. If I'm going on what you're saying,
yeah.
A great captain will go together and try to unite the locker room and put the team first, the fans first. At the end of the day, you're a professional.
Yeah.
And that just goes back to what I was saying later. I just think they need to clean up. And I know like we were talking about this to flip-flop here with Fernando Santos with the money. It's not easy to get rid of him because of the money, and it's an actual fact. Well, imagine they paid $80 million for Fernando Santos. Obviously, he's a coach. I'm just trying to make a point here. But they invested so much into Maguire.
Yeah.
He's the team captain. One of the biggest transfers they've ever done, if not the biggest. You know how embarrassing that would be to be like, yeah, he's not working out. Strip the captaincy. Get rid of him. It's so difficult.
And he's English.
So, honestly, there's a lot of tough decisions Man United's going to have to make. And it's one of their, I think it was their CEO actually stepped down. The person running the club president stepped down. But there's another person taking over. So there is changes happening, but honestly, it's a tough situation at Manchester United.
You're right. It is a tough situation. Cristiano Ronaldo, he's a natural leader in many ways. He also has a big ego, and he's also out for doing things for himself. He sometimes lets his frustration get the better of him. In this situation, would it not be best for the leader to kind of keep things in the dressing room than putting it public like Ronaldo did, though? You're just adding a whole more pressure here to the situation.
That's a really good point, Kev. This is where sometimes I think Ronaldo gets it wrong. And I think his ego gets in the way sometimes because he likes to be in the spotlight. He likes to be in the limelight. And I think he does not – there's been so much talk about whether or not it's been – whether or not Ronaldo is the problem in his team, whether he was the problem with Juventus, whether he's the problem with Portugal. And I think he wants so bad to always have a good image and want people to think it's almost like he needed to go out there and make a statement to take the blame off of him in a way. And to Kev's point, that's poor leadership. So there's no question that him coming out and making those statements, if there is that divide in the locker room, just threw a fucking stick of dynamite in that room and blew everybody that much more apart and that much further apart after stuff like that. Because he's going out and he's basically saying, I'm not the problem. It's the young kids that are the problem. They can't take criticism. When I was 18 years old and I had a player like a Roy Keane or somebody, you know, more experienced talk to me, it was a chance to learn. And these kids can't take criticism. So he's basically going out there saying, these kids can't take criticism. That's where the problem
is. You're 100% right. I agree with some things, but he wasn't the first one to come out. So actually what actually created this, I'm not sure if you've seen this interview, is Luke Shaw post-match. He was saying that there's a lot of players underperforming, that he's pretty much the one that got the ball rolling and made people ask questions after the post-match. And he's had his issues. Maguire's had his issues before this. And yeah, I'm with you that maybe he gave a little bit too much. I am 100% with you. I'm not defending him there, but he's for sure not the first one to come out. Yeah. So this has already been an issue. Like I said, I think it started with Luke Shaw post-match. But honestly, like that being said, do you think he's wrong for coming out and criticizing younger players for not wanting to learn and not wanting to be better?
He's not wrong in criticizing them. I think he's wrong in doing it publicly.
Yes, 100%, Mitch, 100%.
You know, as a leader, if you really are a leader and you want to come in and you're going to try and help unite the group, you got to keep that shit behind closed doors, man.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to try to publicly support your players. And this is, you know, to give you an example, there was a bunch of people questioning Ruben Amorim the other day about Pot's performances lately. Pedro Gonçalves, that he's not scoring. And man, I love the way he dealt with that question. You know, he didn't throw him under the bus. He basically said, yeah, you know what? I think we're all used to Pedro Gonçalves scoring all these goals. We have to remember he's a midfielder. He's not a striker, and the goals will come naturally. It's just, if you're a leader, you got to make sure that you are supporting your teammates or your players. And I think Ronaldo, this is where his ego sometimes is his own best enemy or his own worst enemy. You know, you can't do that. You can't go out there and do that. You drop a bomb in the dressing room. Like, do you think what you just did is going to, what is it going to do? You think it's going to make things better? It's not going to make things better. It's going to make things worse. Not to say he was wrong. I think a lot of people would agree with him, but keep that shit behind closed doors, man. Hold a team meeting. Pull these guys aside.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
You know,
and that's why.
You want to come out with it. Let's say, just 1 second. If you want to, let's say he leaves, right? Let's say he leaves this summer, and he gets interviewed, and they ask, "What the hell happened at Man United?" You want to come out with it then? Come out with it then. But right now, when the team is struggling to get results, and you drop a bomb like that, that's not fucking helping anybody.
1,000%. And that's why I really like this quote from Bruno Fernandes, where he goes, "I'm happy to score goals, but I want to help the team more. I would prefer to let someone else score and we win the game." Bruno Fernandes is really starting to take on that leadership role. He gets it. He's really starting to get it and doesn't have that ego and is really team oriented. That to me speaks volumes. I'm excited to see where things go once we do get to that post-Ronaldo era, which we will be getting there sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and we talked about this when Ronaldo went to United, was what was that going to do to Bruno Fernandes' role at the club? Was it going to take a backseat to Ronaldo? And I've kind of seen that happen. And you saw, you know, remember the post that we even showed here, you know, Bruno Fernandes, you know, sitting as a kid watching Ronaldo. You know, this is a guy who idolized Ronaldo. And I think, you know, in a way, you know, Ronaldo being there potentially has maybe stalled Bruno Fernandes in a way to really take on that full leadership role, because he almost hesitates now to maybe speak up. Maybe he hesitates a little bit because he doesn't want to overstep Ronaldo. He doesn't want to, you know, seem like he's one-upping Ronaldo. And again, this is the challenges, as many wonderful things as Cristiano Ronaldo brings to a team, these are sometimes the challenges at his age now that he brings to certain clubs is, you know, other players who can potentially step up into that leadership role now all of a sudden feel either threatened or feel, you know, gun shy a little bit about stepping up and, you know, being that leader because, you know, it's Konoha.
Yeah. To go back to that point, and I know we all got what Ronaldo was trying to say. It's a lot to your point. But in this interview, he did say, I'm not talking about my team specifically. I have four kids. That's how I know that the next generation, they don't like to listen. So I got to add that. He did try to – we know who he is. We knew what he was trying to say. But in his own Ronaldo way, he did try to mask it by saying it was his kid. So he didn't – although we got what he was trying to say, and nobody's denying that, he did in his own Ronaldo way try to mask it and not say it was his teammates. I know we all knew his teammates, but he did say it was his because he has four kids and he knows that sometimes when he talks with his kids, they don't like to listen, whatever. So he did try, but yeah, I do agree with a lot of your points. Maybe publicly that wouldn't be the best way to go about it for sure. But that being said, he did come from the Galacticos, which is like a fucking team with full of professionals. So I think he still's got to understand not every team's like that. Like that, remember that Real Madrid team? They had like Sergio Ramos. They had all these big, massive like professionals and egos in the locker room. So that's where he comes from. That's where he holds that standard. And in his own way, he wants to bring them to that standard.
But it's right? Also a different generation of players.
Yeah, for sure.
1,000%.
And I think that's kind of where he was hitting at. Was there's that Sergio Ramos, Cristiano Ronaldo, they're around the same age. There's a different generation of players that existed in that Real Madrid era.
Yeah.
And Cristiano Ronaldo went there fairly young. So that generation grew up and they killed it. They were, you know, they won the Decima. They, you know, they did all of these amazing things as a group, and it was just a different dynamic. Whereas now Ronaldo is, you know, 37 years old and
different generation.
It's a different generation that he's working with completely. So, and he's coming in with a different role. You know, he didn't come in with the same role that he went into Real Madrid with, right? So yeah. It's very different. It's a very
and there was also dynamic. there was also a lot of pressure this time around too, because they brought in Ronaldo specifically to be like, we're going to make a run at this, and it's turned out to be an unmitigated disaster.
Yeah, you see.
Quick update: Santa Clara and Tondela final score 2-2. Tondela with a pair of goals. Tondela's
been doing good too.
In the last 12 minutes of the game, they scored two goals to tie it up. So there's your update.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one more thing. You also see that with coaching. So there's a clash of generations. So I feel like there's new age and old age. Like old age is like a George Jesus, right? Yeah. And new age is more like a Ruben Amorim. So I feel like Ronaldo is stuck in that because he's been around for so long and his longevity. He sort of has two different ways of going about it also in soccer. Now the game has changed.
Yeah.
The way you communicate has changed. Everything's changed. So I think he's also struggling with those things, which a lot of coaches go through too.
Yeah.
So we know that Christian can spend the entire day talking about Cristiano Ronaldo, about how amazing he is. And that wouldn't be fun. What is really fun, though, is what the heck is wrong with Benfica? Like, my goodness.
I'll take a step back.
they dropped a few points again yesterday. 1-1 draw with Morenes. They are now, pretty much firmly in third place. I mean, obviously, Sporting can drop some points and Benfica can try and make up some ground. But for all intents and purposes, Benfica likely to finish in third place, which means Champions League qualification for next year. So at this point, what's going on? Is there anything that can salvage the season for Benfica? Or if you're the team, do you just put 100% focus on Champions League and just try and do the best you can there to make more money? What's going on?
Well, with Benfica, I mean, we talked about this last week. You know, Jorge Jesus leaving, you know, I agree. I don't think he was the right coach for Benfica, but the problems with Benfica don't start and end with Jorge Jesus. He was not the only issue there. There's problems in the dressing room. There's problems in the boardroom. You know, there's a lot of different things going on here. But I think what the game yesterday showed is first and foremost, it's with the players, man. And I'm the first one to call out Jorge Jesus and say that I didn't think he was the right coach for Benfica. But at the same time, the players also have to take responsibility for the way they play. And, you know, this thought or you know, concept that as soon as Jorge Jesus leaves, there's going to be this reviravolta with the team, and we're all of a sudden going to start winning every game. It's not going to happen, man. There's a lot of things that need to change with Benfica right now. And you saw yesterday a team that came in very lackluster. You know, a big fan of the podcast, Richie, he's always talking about the fitness levels of Benfica. I think the mentality of the players, you know, you're going into a game yesterday with the Moreirense team that's fighting relegation right now. And there was no garra. There was no, like they held possession. They were passing the ball around. It was very like just lackluster, man. You know, it was yeah, I'm July. You know, the goal will come. Like it's almost with that mentality that yeah, the goal will come. There was no intensity. There was no like let's go kill this game. Like let's go score 2-3 goals. They lacked intensity. And you know, you can say it's the coach, which there's partially that, but the players got to come to play, man. The players have to show up to play. And I don't even want to get into the refereeing scandal, because there was some very questionable calls yesterday. But
just another day in Liga Portugal.
But I don't even want to go there. And you know, I was listening to some guys talk that because the fans basically booed and whistled the team off, and there was a guy saying, "Oh, they were whistling at the refereeing team." I don't think it was that, man. I think they were pissed off with the team because they saw the way they played, man. It was not. That's not the caliber of football that we've come to expect from Benfica, and it's, you know, it's one of those things in a crisis, just like we were, much like Man United right now. Big clubs like Man United, like Benfica, the fans demand a very high level, and we're very impatient, and we want results now. You fire a coach, we want the team winning tomorrow. The team's not winning. Somebody needs to be the scapegoat. Somebody needs to be, you know, held responsible. Coach, you know, I don't know if you've seen, there was a fan that went up to the camarote, the presidencial, and started screaming at Simón Sobrosa. Simón Sobrosa is the director of international relations for Benfica. He's screaming at Simón. You know, the fans, as fans, we want somebody to blame. We want somebody to blame so they can fix it. At the end of the day, right now, what everybody needs around Benfica is a little bit of patience. Jorge Jesus just left. The fact of the matter is, we're more than likely not going to win the Liga this year. The best result I think we can hope for is second place. In just I'm just being realistic. And I don't see us getting through Ajax. So I think the team just needs a little bit of patience, and we just need to know that we're going through a transition right now from the Jorge Jesus era, and we can't be expecting results like this. At the same time, I don't think it's acceptable to go in and at home have a draw with Moreirense. Yep. You know, there has to be some standards set, but I think more than anything, we just need some patience right now and understand we're going through a transition.
So what's the path forward? We have Paul Da Silva tuning in, asking, does Benfica wait to hire a coach in the summer, or do they do it now?
Well, here's the thing. So you brought in Verissimo, who, you know, is coming from the B team. You've already told him that he's going to be there till the end of the year. You can't all of a sudden bring in another coach now. Give him a chance, because what if he proves to be really, really good between now and the end of the year? What if the team really bands behind him, and what if he does really well? You may want to keep him. I think if the plan was to hire him, you should have right away announced him as interim head coach while we look for somebody new. And we're looking for somebody, and you basically state the intention right away. We're looking for somebody right away. But you already came out and said he's going to be there till the end of the year, and then we'll see. So now you gotta go with it.
Yeah.
Do I think Nelson Verissimo is the right guy? I don't know, man. I didn't think Bruno Lage was the right guy when they brought Bruno Lage in. he ended up being a great coach. So I can't say that, you know, Nelson Verissimo will or will not do a great job. I think if you put him in there, you said you're going to give him to the end of the year, give him to the end of the year. I mean, at this point, I don't know that bringing in another coach like an Abel Ferreira or Nuno Espírito Santo is going to spark all that much of an improvement in the players. Like right now, I think the players need to come out and prove that they can play, and they need to unite. They need to support the new coach. And, you know, there's a lot of – sometimes you've even seen it. Sometimes teams don't even need a coach. You know what I'm saying? Like they can play – it's up to them to – they know how to play the game. These guys have been – they're professionals. They know how to play the game. They need to come out – at this point, they need to show that they can play. And they need to support the new manager. And they need to try to get a good result for the end of the season, which is second place. That's what they need to shoot for.
Yeah, it's funny because that's a lot of what Ronaldo was saying in his interview, not to jump back and forth, but that's pretty much it was his point. That being said, the problems with Benfica, like from the outside looking in, it actually started at the beginning of the season. You guys are going into the season with a new president, the whole scandals, the whole JJ thing, like it was already divided. So this has been going on for a while. I think I agree with you. Give Verissimo to the end of the year. It's really hard to bring in a coach in January. So, until like already want Verissimo out after one draw. You know what I mean? Like the guy needs time too. And one thing about with Verissimo, he knows the younger kids. He's already bringing up Paul Bernardo. I know you mentioned that you were really happy with that. And I think he's going to be a great player. So he does bring that element. Start bringing up some younger guys that know what Benfica is and you know how big of a club it is. When you bring up those kids through the academy, they live and breathe it. Sometimes those guys are – you don't want to fill them up too much. You want to like sort of one by one or in the right role, but at least those guys know what they're playing for.
Rui Costa talked about that. Yeah. He was interviewed last week, and he even said, he goes, you know, we're not going to sign as many new players because we want to try and make way. The more new players you sign, you take away an opportunity for somebody from the B team to come up and one of the kids to come up and shine. Yeah. So, you know, I think they need to do that. I think they need, we've signed enough. We've spent enough money at this point. Yeah. I think we need to work with what we have.
And so then
to Rich Ferreira watching, thanks for tuning in, my friend. You know, to that point, he goes, look, 100% instant results not going to happen if you hire a new coach right now, but it will give more time to develop and express their philosophy. That's the key if they sign one now to be ready for the summer and Champions League playoffs looking ahead to next year. So you're right. If they aren't looking to sign new players and they're looking at let's develop with what we have and go forward with what we have, then maybe it isn't a bad opportunity to get a coach in now. But at the same time, if you wait till the end of the season, there's a lot more movement. There might be a coach that becomes available. Who knows, right? There's a lot more opportunities.
And I was all for them bringing in a new coach. But like I say, if the intent was to bring in a new coach outside of the inner circle of Benfica, that intention should have been stated as soon as they let Jorge go. Rui Costa said, we're going to start the process of looking for a new coach from outside in the interim. Nelson Verissimo is going to come in. Could be a month, could be 2 months, could be 3 months until we find somebody new. But the process has already started. We've already made contacts. That wasn't the intention stated. It was Nelson Verissimo is going to come in until the end of the year, and then we'll reevaluate at then. If you all of a sudden now, after one impact, you go out there and you start to bring in a new coach, it's just going to add even. Yeah. This is going to become a graveyard of treinadores here. Like at this point, you've said Verissimo is going to be the guy until the end of the year. He's brought in his staff. You stay the course, and you just like I say, at this point, I think everybody within the realm of Benfica just needs a little bit of patience. We need to accept that this season is another loss. Unfortunately, I don't think we're gonna make a run at Liga Champions this year. It is what it is. We try to shoot for second. And we just accept that. And just right now we need patience. We need patience to let the team rebuild and get back to winning form.
So looking ahead to second place, things are, I mean, we're getting pretty interesting right now. So as it stands right now, Sporting is 3 points up on Benfica, but obviously Sporting plays in about 23 minutes against Vizela. in all honesty, Sporting should win that game. So they'll be 6 points up on Benfica.
Vizela is a very, very well-coached team.
So anything can happen, certainly. In theory, Sporting should get the W there. But then it's next week. Sporting takes on Braga. That'll be the bigger game, certainly. Again, I'm confident Sporting can get that result. But Braga, no pushover. So, I mean, there definitely is room for Benfica to try and make up some ground. Christian, with these two games here against Vizela and Braga, what are you expecting out of Sporting?
So the last two games Sporting played was against Portimonense and obviously Santa Clara. Against Portimonense, we struggle too, like a lot. So the last two games, we have not looked at our best. And a lot of it is because we've been suffering with a lot of COVID problems, injuries, so on and so forth. And Sporting financially can't go out and buy so many players. They got to sort of just pull one in and make do with what they got. There is some players back, so I am confident. I am confident, but it's going to be very interesting. There's a lot of questions to be asked this game, so we want to see what Sporting comes out. Because like the last game, we're known to be a very, very well-organized and defensive team. Last two games, we did not have that, so this is going to be a big game for us. Obviously, like Mitch just said, they're a very, very well-coached team. They play really good soccer, too. Even when they first came up, it was their first game they played was against us in the Portuguese League. Yeah, we went, and on paper, it looked like, you know, it was an easy game, but they play really good soccer, man. They came out, and they got a couple chances right off the bat. So, they, as you know, they're a well-coached team. They play really good soccer. Anything can happen. I hope they win because – after Braga, there's a Porto Sporting coming up. And that's, for me, it's the biggest game of the season because if Porto wins, you know, it's
now,
pretty much goodbye.
In theory, that game could be delayed potentially, right? Because of it's the same couple days before the Champions League. So hopefully they'll figure out a way to give both teams a little bit of rest time before that huge pivotal matchup that could very well determine the league. But
I'm just looking at the starting lineup for Sporting. They've got Nuno Santos playing in the left back role.
Yeah, no, that's been a common occurrence.
Yeah?
Yeah, because Fidel's hurt. So, Vinag is slowly come back. He picked up an injury. He has been out for a long time. He played in the last cup game. It was the first time back in months. So, but Mateusz Krejci, he plays left back or center back. I personally don't like him at center back. I don't feel like he's solid enough. But yeah, he's been trying Nuno Santos at left back just because Sarabia is in his spot. Mm-hmm. They want all those players playing at the same time.
And your buddy Ishgaiu starting at right back.
Yeah, Ishgaiu.
Where's Poch? Well, he's still injured?
Poch's still injured. So last year, he was, I don't know if you remember who his substitute was. It was João Pereira.
Yeah.
João Pereira probably played, I think he played one game the whole year. And he was like 38. Peter Poch was an Iron Man. He played every cup game, every game he played. Yeah. This year, it's been a bit of a disappointment, not in terms of performance, because he's a great, great player. It's just injuries. He got hurt the preseason. He'll play like one or two games, gets hurt again, and then gets hurt again. It's probably his fifth or sixth injury. Yeah. He's a big, big part of our team. So,
yeah. Do you regret letting Antunes go?
No. I think, like much to your point, you were talking about Benfica having, they spent enough money to have enough players. They have like 10 players for every position. Ruben Amorim, although it can backfire sometimes, especially with in the COVID era and with injuries, you don't have that next player always there. But his mentality is to have two good players for every position because he likes to grow their players, right? Like you said earlier, for every player you bring in, you're taking an opportunity for somebody else. So he's big on that. He's huge on that. So yeah, letting Antunes go, he wasn't part of the future. He wasn't growing with their team. So yeah, he got in Mateusz Krejci. Mateusz Krejci grew a lot this year, especially with Vinagre going down. So I don't think we're missing him. The one player I think we're missing that we let go is Quaresma, Eduardo Quaresma. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, he's not really taking that main role at Tondela. He is 19 years old, but really good talented player. I think that's the one player that we're sort of shooting ourselves. for loaning out, because our center back position is very, very, you know, small right now. We don't have like a big pool of players to play. So we're, like you said, you have Mateusz Hajsz playing left back or center back.
Mateusz Nunes dropped to the bench.
Yeah, I didn't see the starting lineup.
I guess so. The starting lineup for Sporting, and then Mateusz Hajsz, Coates, and Inácio, and Nuno Santos, Bragança, Palhinha, Isgaio, Pote, Paulinho, e Sarabia.
Yeah, Bragança, to be fair to Bragança, he's been playing really, really good. He's growing a lot, and you can see that he's going to be a big, big player for us.
So Porto plays today as well. They're taking on Bissad. I think Porto will be happy as they get a big W there.
Who are they playing again? I know you love saying that name.
Bissad.
That's your favorite. Every time you get a chance to say that name, you a big smile on your face.
But you know what, though? You want them to... Here's one person that might be happy is this guy right here, Steven Eustáquio, and there's rumors that he's about to sign with Porto on a loan spell with the option to make it a permanent move. How big of a move would that be for Porto and obviously for Eustáquio to be going up to one of the big three?
Well, this had been talked about already last year. We thought it was going to happen. It didn't end up happening. Obviously, we're all very familiar with Eustáquio, with the Canadian national team. He's a big player for Canada. He's a big player for Pasto Ferreira. And I think right now, with Sergio Oliveira being loaned out to Roma, this could make way for Eustáquio to come in and you know, potentially be. I don't see him going in and taking anybody's spot in the starting 11 with this Porto team, but I think he's definitely a good option and could potentially be a good backup for the midfield role. But I don't think he's going to be going there and taking the starting role off the bat anyway. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yeah, no, Steven Eustáquio's a fantastic player. We've seen him live, or at least I did, when he came to Edmonton, and you could just see he's a special player. He controls the midfield. I think him going to Porto is a great move. But, yeah, I agree with you. The way Porto's playing, who they have in the midfield, it'd be hard for him to crack the lineup, which is sort of crummy in terms of the Canada national team standpoint. You want this guy to be playing and growing with the team. But him as a player, I have nothing but great things to say about him. I think he's a great player and would be a great addition to any team. That being said, since we're on the topic of Canada, Canada sort of took a huge blow yesterday. Alfonso Davies came out and it's looking like he has myocarditis. Hopefully, I know he's going to be out for, I think, actually Kevin's the one that told me he's going to be out for all the Canada games.
Yeah, he's out for 4 weeks minimum. Okay. So he's going to have to just rest up. It's a mild case of myocarditis. Okay. It was just a little bit of inflammation around the heart. That will heal itself. It just needs time and rest. He'll be fine. Unfortunately, it does mean he will miss the three games against Honduras, El Salvador, and the United States. Big World Cup qualifiers for sure. Look, Canada has certainly done itself a favor by doing so well in this first half of qualifying, that it's not the end of the world not having Alfonso Davies. They've done it before without him. They still have, you know, solid players up front. We'll just have to see kind of what happens. What concerns me a little bit is, look, the United States is not the big, scary team in CONCACAF that they used to be. I think a win or a draw is still very much possible, even without Alfonso Davies. The games that might be a little interesting, obviously, going into Honduras and El Salvador, always difficult to play on the road. But I'm confident Canada is going to be able to at least pull off 3-4 points somewhere along the way out of those three games. And that should be enough to keep them in that top four position and get them comfortable heading into Qatar.
Imagine a World Cup with Canada in it and not Portugal, hey?
Let's not talk about that. Let's not talk about that. What we should talk about, though, is our Sagi Stars of the Week presented by Sagipair North America. Visit sagipairnorthamerica.com for more information. You can also find them in the latest edition of Edify magazine you can find around Edmonton, around town. So take a look at that. I'm going to start first. No surprise with this one. I thought it was the easy choice. I thought it was going to be unanimous. Apparently it wasn't. But Bruno Fernandes, 2 goals. Manchester United played really well. First goal was a little fluky, but whatever. At the end of the day, he did well. Great to see him finally getting on that score sheet and proving himself there with Manchester United. Of course, it happens with Cristiano Ronaldo not in the lineup. So what does that say? I'm just trying to bust your balls there, Christian. The other guy, we're going to go to Christian now for his Saji Star of the Week, who has already made an impression today in their first appearance. Go ahead, Christian.
Honestly, the reason why I didn't pick Bruno is because it was a poor result from Manchester United standpoint, or else I would have given it to him. But I got to give a shout out to my boy, Nani. Club or Flesong legend. He always showed up for us, played way better for us than he always did in his club teams. Always stepped up for us. Nothing but praise for Nani. He was on for a grand total of 1 minute before getting an assist. New move, new Italian team. And yeah, shout out to Nani. He's back playing full flight in a tough league. So still got it. He killed the MLS and now he's still going. Another guy that, you know, is older and he's still performing. So
shout out to Nani. So Nani gets the assist. Venezia and Empoli tied a 1-1. That's the final score there. Mitch, what do you have?
My Saji Star, I was going to go with Bruno Fernandes, but I figured I'd go with somebody a little bit different just to change it up and shake it up. Toti Gomes, probably not a lot of people know about this kid. He's a center back. Used to play for Estoril in Portugal. He actually got his start for Wolves yesterday in the first EPL game. He actually played very, very well. And, of course, we all know we're a little bit short on quality in the center back area. So anytime we see a good young Portuguese center back up and coming, we like to put the highlight on him. He played really, really well. So, you know, obviously to get the start in the EPL, you've got to be good. And he actually played very, very well. Commentators were very impressed with him as well yesterday. So could be a guy that we're looking to see move up in the Seleção soon. So good to see. And interesting to note, I was reading an article about him yesterday because I wanted to learn a little bit about him. He actually was a rugby player.
Oh, really?
Rugby player till he was about 15. And at 15, he had to kind of make a choice between going with football or rugby. And he chose to go with football. So
probably made a good choice. I was going to ask you, what do you think of what Ricky said?
And he's a money hungry bum. Well, that's probably more in your realm than it is.
I left that up just to get a reaction out of you, Christian.
Honestly, no, it's good for him, man. He's older. He's got to get paid, man. These soccer players, once they get older, you know, they have such a small window to make their money. Why not? He was living in Orlando, and now he's in Italy, Venice. Like, good for him, man.
Yeah.
Guys, we are 9 minutes away from kickoff to the Sporting game, and more importantly, the NFL wildcard playoffs. So I want to wrap this up really quick. But before we do.
Hands up, then we gonna drop.
We haven't made panel picks in a little while. That's okay. I'm going to put you guys all on the spot. One game, Sporting versus Braga next week. What's the result? Mitch, go first.
Braga.
Braga won.
You're first.
Okay.
Christian.
He's hungry for those points, eh? Because, you know, if Sporting went today to 6 points back, that's hunger right there. But
yeah.
Honestly, it's going to be a tough game. I would lean, obviously, I think Sporting's going to win just because there's that big Sporting Porto coming up. I feel like they cannot even afford a draw in that game. They got to go up minimal 3 points back on Porto going into that game because the season, in my opinion, could be over if we do lose that game or we're in a position where we're more than 3 points or 4 points away from them. So, yeah, I would go Sporting win for sure.
Yeah, I'm going with the Sporting win as well. I'm confident they'll be able to get the job done. So we'll be happy, and then Mitch will just be wondering, again, what's wrong with Benfica? Why can't they do it? We'll be talking about that all next week.
We should have an idea, like a little podcast idea where we do flashbacks of certain things we said at the beginning of the year. If you remember what Mitch said about
Benfica. Remember when.
With George Jules being the best coach and they're going to win the league.
I don't know if Mitch ever said that Jorge Jesus was the best
coach. He did say it. I'll pull it up.
He may have been drinking. I don't know.
Fact check.
Yeah.
He did say it. Yeah. That would be, I don't like using this term, but that would be fake news, I'm sure. All right, guys. We're going to call our quits because the sporting game is about to start. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Tuga, the Everything Portuguese Soccer Podcast by the fans, for the fans. Mitch, Christian, I'm Kevin. Thanks for tuning in. And we will talk to you again soon. Cheers.
Cheers.